7% of the slowdown is cyclical. Kaiser Family Foundation says 77%. The thing that I think most people haven't paid attention to is that they're looking at different time periods. So David is looking at the period 2003 to 2012. That's a pretty long time period. The slowdown, the true recession, of course, is only a few years. So it's a smaller fraction of that time period, just in terms of counting years. The Kaiser Family Foundation and Alterum report looked at 2008 to 2012. It's not clear what the right measure is. It's not clear how much of this is cyclical. It depends on how you think about it. But clearly, the observation period and the modeling assumptions drive the results, as opposed to some fundamental truth. This is a very difficult kind of analysis. So after you have cleaned out the cyclical component, however you've decided to clean it out, what does the residual tell us? And the answer, I think, is not very much. It doesn't tell us why the decline occurred. It doesn't say, it certainly is not a good predictor of how much of the decline will persist. And in particular, something that this conversation often overlooks, which is, yeah, we care about spending, and we care about spending growth rates. That's certainly an issue. But we also care about access to care, quality of care, medical innovation. We care about all those things. So focusing on spending rates is, I would argue, a very small part of the overall policy question. Have we been there before? This is a chart from the Kaiser Family Foundation Alterum report. And they want to say that we've been there before. This is excess health spending growth adjusted their way for GDP and inflation. And you can see the whatever off-color lines those are, that the patterns kind of look similar. On the other hand, it's also true, and I think Gene's charts also demonstrate this, that you see kind of similar patterns. If you just look to earlier years, you see similar cyclical patterns. But the big difference is that in the 90s, the average level of this excess spending growth was a lot lower than preceding decades. And although in that, I can't tell what years those are, I guess it's the early 2000s, it popped back up to historical levels. But then here we are in this current period, and we see that we're back down to what we saw in the 90s, a lower average level of excess health spending growth. So that, you know, gives me some pause, but not enough to be confident. So I'm going to focus on how this time might be different. These are some points that I think Bob and others have already made. I'll make them in my own way. Why might things be different? Change in provider attitudes. I think it is true. I think that when providers think that something is inevitable, they do want to lead it. I think that when in 2009, when we saw those great press conferences on the White House lawn, those were representatives of provider groups who were basically saying, we think that President Obama's health reform is going to happen, and so if you think it's going to happen, you should get on board. And that was turned out to be a very good judgment. Changes in the way providers work. The graduating class of physicians is now more than 50% physicians, women physicians, and they are increasingly on the balance of working 90 hours a day and trying to make a lot of money or having something like a more normal life. The decision seems to be going more towards a normal life, not just among women physicians, but it seems all physicians coming out of school these days. Furthermore, they tend to be joining up with hospitals or larger organizations. They're not becoming entrepreneurs and starting up small practices. There's also the question of health information technology. Everybody points to it. I don't want to mention that health affairs article. I'll mention it in the next slide. But the great hope is that health IT is going to lead to better information for the physician, more efficient delivery of healthcare. New kinds of delivery organizations, ACOs, medical homes, minute clinics. Again, the pattern of healthcare delivery may be changing. We'll see. And that may be bringing us some efficiencies. The new marketplaces, which we have to see come to reality, but there's a hope there that people will be able to make better choices given better information. And then finally, new financial incentives, changes in payment methodologies that we talk about that we're only beginning to see very slowly. Some people point to the Cadillac tax to discourage people from buying excessively generous insurance coverage, and then, of course, high deductible insurance. So you see all these things and other things that you can think of. You could say, well, this might really be different, but I wouldn't bet on it. Providers do respond to incentives. If they think something is going to happen inevitably, they do want to get ahead of the parade, but they want to get ahead of the parade not just out of the goodness of their hearts. They want to protect their market position. This is not an insult. It's a fact, and it's a very reasonable thing to do. If organized medicine has been very good at recognizing changes in financial conditions over the years, and with a lag adjusting to it. But if they could get ahead of the curve, I'm sure so much the better as far as their strategies are concerned. Changes in the way, let's see, what did I do here? Oh, okay, the new work patterns don't necessarily guarantee savings. It is true that we're seeing a lot more new physicians going into the hospital setting. We're also seeing a change in the way patients are cared for in the hospital. You see hospitalists, you see a lot of handoffs. Those handoffs, every time there's a handoff between shifts, there are potential challenges with regard to the condition of the patient and the treatment. I saw a study recently, I think it was either JAMA or the New England Journal, that said that the movement to shorter shifts, as far as the physicians are concerned, does not improve care, doesn't make them less tired, doesn't make them less prone to errors. So, health IT, it's only as good as the managers who use it. We bought a lot of software, we bought a lot of hardware, but you still have to have the thinking and the managerial ability and the cooperation of your organization to make all that work. That remains to be seen in many, many places. We'll see about the ACA, but one thing is a fact. Oh, market consolidation. Market consolidation is a big, big issue. This is related to the ACA. The ACA is promoting ACOs. ACOs are another way of conglomerating market power, at least theoretically, in healthcare, local healthcare markets. Some people argue that consolidation is good. We'll have more coordinated care. Maybe we will. But if that's the case, if there are efficiencies, then the question is, where do those efficiencies accrue? Do they accrue to the general society, or do they accrue to those who are innovating in the way they organize their healthcare? And will prices go down, or will they stay up? That's a mystery. The ACA, of course, it will increase demand with that many more people with health coverage. But we're not going to be increasing, to any great extent, the supply of services. In particular, again, it's the physicians. It's the people who provide the services. It's hard to produce a physician at the drop of a hat. It's hard to produce a nurse at the drop of a hat. We're not doing that at a much greater rate than in the past. Finally, employer-sponsored insurance, fee-for-service Medicare, largely unreformed. It's too hard to tell. It's too soon to tell whether payment changes will work as advertised, the bundling and so on in Medicare. And then finally, medical technology and expectations. The expectations, what it boils down to is, if somebody else is paying for it, I want it. If I'm paying for it, I'll think about it. And so I think the biggest problem in this sense is that generous third-party payment, coupled with the very much non-transparent way in which people actually pay for insurance and pay for healthcare, this lack of clarity that most people have, that is the original sin, in my view. And we haven't done anything to address that in any strong way, other than high-deductible health plans, which, as David or someone said, is growing, but not necessarily to a great extent. The other thing about medical technology is, of course, that personalized healthcare, especially drug-related, genomic-based kinds of treatments, can be very, very expensive. Clearly, if there really is a drug that is just right for me and not right for anybody else, there are no scale economies and prices will go up. So let's not just sit there. I would argue that waiting is not a solution. Employers have taken bolder steps than the government out of necessity. You get off the dime if you think you're in trouble. And employers are really right there at the cusp. They have essentially not been able to raise wages to any great extent over the last decade. And the idea that health benefits are eating up wages, wage growth is a real problem for them. There's plenty of room for better policy. And I would point to a whole bunch of things, but if we don't want to deal directly with the health system, we could at least deal with the tax system. Thanks.
Okay, the purpose of these meetings is to get good discussion going, and we have 20 minutes for discussion. Identify yourself when you're called on. I don't know if there's going to be microphones around or you're
just
going
to
press the button. Okay. Okay, Peggy, show us how it's done.
I think it's fair to say that there's been a real article. Can you hear me?
Introduce yourself.
Oh, Peggy O'Kane from Insecure. The Stephen Brill article in Time magazine seemed to have kind of an electrifying effect on regular people who I think have not been paying too much or are confused about healthcare costs. And I think that the release of the information from CMS is building on that. But where do we take that? First of all, I don't know if you agree, but I find the articles are somewhat confusing and don't explain the relationships between charges and costs and who pays what. So I think people are somewhat mystified. They're kind of angry, but they're mystified. And I just want to ask you smart people, what can we do to run with this energy and to put a little more discipline in the system?
I think the smart people may have just left the room.
Can you make sure you're
Can people hear me? I think there is actually a very big growing movement to make these prices available. I was surprised in Massachusetts how easy it was to convince people that we just ought to require insurers to provide that information to people. And it literally says in real time, and they have to do it faster than they wanted to do it, and with more detail than they wanted to do.
You're talking about what the co-payment or co-insurance is as opposed to the total charge.
That's correct.
That's correct. Or the fictional, here's what we charge a Saudi prince should he stumble into our hospital and have to pay for it.
And actually both are getting publicized. And then you see companies that are rushing into the space to fill this void. So, given everything that Gene and Joe and I were saying about the slow growth of wages, it's really becoming a very big issue for people. I also note that some of the national insurance plans, the Aetnas of the world, have decided that they really need to provide this information, and that rather than sort of just bearing risk, the way they're going to conceptualize themselves is as a way to help the consumer navigate healthcare, and a big part of that is going to be on the cost sharing. And another big part is going to be helping them to decide what they do and don't need. So I would be very surprised if this does not change rapidly and if there isn't more legislation pushing it along.
You know, my general thesis fits right with that. I mean, basically I'm saying is this base of healthcare keeps growing larger. The natural inclinations of people and economy to try to find efficiency improvements has got to increase proportionally with the size of that base. So the base keeps getting larger, which means there's more and more attention to this type of thing. And you're pointing particularly to one aspect of the whole